Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Beautiful day out there. A few minutes past 4 p.m. Our buddy John Hancock from Hancock & Kelly joins us now. Hello, John.
Hey, guys.
So, no pressure, but you're the only pundit we're having on today. So, if it doesn't happen right now, it's not going to happen.
Well, you want to know what's going to happen tonight?
Well, first of all, let's take it one stage at a time. Let's talk about historically how weird this is. I mean, it's weird when it's happening. It's weird how it's happening without any sort of structure from the typical organization that runs the presidential debates. It's weird how it's happening practically with no audience. It's weird how it's happening practically with the mute button and so forth. Just talk a little bit about how weird this is.
It's weird. unprecedented. Now, I do think it's precedent setting in one respect. And I think the presidential debate commissions is a thing of the past. I don't think you'll ever see that institution again be the arbiter of how presidential debates are going. Yeah, it was for many years, the public financing that came along with running for president was tied to your participation in the presidential debate commissions. Well, really, since the Obama era, none of the major candidates ever take public financing because they raise more money than the public financing would allow. So from a practical standpoint, the debate commission is dead, and you're going to be left with the individual campaigns negotiating amongst themselves, the formats, the timing, the moderators, and it's going to get tricky. I'm quite frankly, I'm surprised that the Trump people agreed to this particular format.
Me too, yeah. Brother. I really am. In fact, I said a couple of weeks ago on the air, I thought it was possible that Trump would pull out because I felt like Trump might realize how much he had given up here. But it's an opportunity. I don't think Trump has it in him to show up and be presidential. But boy, he could really pull a fast one on the whole country if he did.
Yeah. I mean, we'll find out. I still think it's a possibility that he won't show up. But certainly the people advising Donald Trump are telling him to stick to the policy, you know, get your digs in at Biden, but make the digs over policy matters, you know, the border, for example, inflation. I just don't know if he is constitutionally capable of doing that. I guess we'll all find out together tonight.
So, John, as you handicap this, what would you say are the areas that are strong for each gentleman, are weak for each gentleman? Where do you think they're most comfortable and least comfortable?
I suspect Biden is going to try and make Donald Trump's the Donald Trump show, the issue, you know, between the indictments and the conviction and the rhetoric. You know, I think Biden's also going to have to try and rehabilitate his record. He's got things to run on, accomplished legislative accomplishments to run on. Just none of that has resonated with the voters. And the overarching thing that Biden's got to accomplish is to not look, you know, unable to do the job.
Yeah.
And Trump needs to not look crazy.
Yeah.
And that's a tall order for both of them. Now, I do think I would be surprised if this results in much of a shifting in the polls going forward. These polls have been stagnant for over a year between these two guys, whether it's the national polls or the in-state polls. Been a little movement in some of the battleground states. I would be surprised if you see more than a couple points movement in any direction, you know, a week after this debate.
Yeah, John, I hear people saying things both personally and on screens. There's no way Biden loses this. There's no way Trump loses this. I think you're a fool if you don't admit that this is anyone's game. It really is. It's a toss-up.
Yeah, no, it really is. I mean, you know, Biden needs to not fall over or freeze, and Trump needs to not look crazy. And, you know, it's perhaps a bit of a lower bar than we've seen in previous debates, but it's the bar nonetheless. And they both have potentially a lot to lose tonight. I just don't think this one debate is going to be that determinative, but we'll know much better in a few hours.
John, you're my historian on all things. Have you seen a debate like this with these sort of rules before? Because I can't remember seeing one.
Closest was the first debate, the Kennedy-Nixon debate, where 1960, where it was just the two of them. The debate was broadcast on the then new technology of television in black and white, of course. And it was also aired on the radio, but they were in a studio, a television studio with no live audience. And the people that, as you know, the people that saw the debate thought Kennedy won, and the people that listened to it thought Nixon won. That's the closest I think we've come to this sort of a confrontation.
Don't you think, too, the JFK administration and really that night was the beginning of the modern cult of personality presidency?
Oh, without question. It's certainly the genesis of the modern political presidential campaign. You know, I mean, it was just 8 years before that, you had a brokered convention on the Republican side. And really beginning in that 1960 race, in the way primaries and caucuses developed and nomination processes began, delegate selection, all of those sorts of things, where voters, more so than party insiders, had the bigger say in who the nominees were going to be. 1960 really is the beginning of the modern presidency.
Do you guys have anything for John? I don't think there's anything that Donald Trump can do that would cause his base to say, oh my God, we've made a horrible mistake here.
No,
I do think that Biden is quite capable of having a senior moment that would just crush his chances. Is it too late? I mean, could you still have a brokered convention for the Democrats if something badly goes wrong tonight or in the future?
Yes. I mean, you'll hear, you know, experts on both sides say yes and or say no. But if the Democratic Party realized that their only hope of winning was to make a change, they would figure out a way to do it. And they've got a benefit of, after the McGovern nomination in 1972, they instituted what they call superdelegates. There's hundreds of them that aren't elected to caucuses and primaries. They're the party bosses in all 50 states. Mm-hmm. And those superdelegates are free to go where they want to go. And I suspect they would get behind somebody. For the longest time, I thought it would be Gavin Newsom. But at this point, given that the convention's in Chicago, if it's a done deal, he's got to go and they've got to make a change. I kind of suspect they might go with Governor Pritzker next door, hometown of Illinois.
Very interesting, Rach.
Be quite interesting. John, I'm fixated on the fact that they're not going to have an audience tonight. I'm wondering, what do you think was behind that decision and who does it ultimately benefit?
Well, the Biden people clearly didn't want a live audience. Donald Trump is an entertainer and he's a good one. Mm. And so when you put the live audience out there, it elevates his standard of performance. You guys know that. I mean, when you do your show live and then with that full auditorium there, it's a different deal. And so I think it definitely benefits Joe Biden. He's going to be, you know, calm and soft-spoken probably, unless he's screaming again. but it definitely benefits Biden. And, you know, and again, I'm surprised the Trump team agreed to this format. Now, it may not have been the Trump team. It may have just been Donald Trump. But I'm surprised they agreed to this format because I don't think it accrues in any respect. The moderators, the shut down microphones, the no audience, all of those things are not things that if I were negotiating the debate for Donald Trump, I wouldn't have signed off on those things.
So following up on that, John, forgetting Trump or Biden, should it be that way moving forward? Should we be in more of a calm, you know, like we're not chasing the cheap applause, we're not chasing that. We should be more focused on being serious.
I think so. You know, I ran for offices nobody cared about, and that's the way our debates happened.
Uh-huh.
And I think you get a more substantive, issue-focused contrast, and campaigns are about contrast. There's nothing wrong with contrast in these things. And I think it's better if you're appealing to an audience that's tuned in rather than trying to stir up an audience that's in the house.
All right, buddy. We appreciate it. And we'll probably have you on tomorrow for Hancock and Kelly. We'll talk about the postmortem.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait for that.
All right. Tune in for these guys in the morning here on KMOX. Rach, got some Throwback Thursday for us?
I sure do. It's time for Throwback Thursday. Let's see what happened on this date in years past. Like in 1829, 195 years ago, British scientist James Smithson died and left his entire fortune to the United States in order to establish the Smithsonian Institute.
Oh, I did not know that.
Look at that guy.
Yeah, pretty cool. 45 years ago, jumping ahead quite a bit, in 1979, Muhammad Ali announced that he was retiring as champion and that this retirement would be final, and it was.
Huh. More boxers need to do that. Like, retire and then, like, it's
done. I never think about boxing ever.
Not anymore. It's just not, I mean.
It was a huge thing when I was a kid.
You know, now that the Tyson Paul thing is on delay at best.
Yeah.
There's nothing. I mean, it's not exciting. And part of it is, like, MMA's better. Like, it's a little more entertaining. It's more, there's more dynamic things going on. But also, it just, there's no, you don't have a Muhammad Ali. You don't have personalities. And I think the problem is, everybody always respected the heavyweight champ of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But when the heavyweight champ of the world is somebody you don't recognize or somebody mm-hmm. who's really boring, mm-hmm. then where's the fun?
Nope, you're right.
36 years ago in 1988, speaking of Mike Tyson, he dropped the undefeated Michael Spinks in 91 seconds to defend his heavyweight title.
I remember that. Sure I watched
do.
It.
Yeah, yep. I paid for it.
Did you? Oops.
I didn't have the money to pay for that.
That night's national anthem actually took 2 seconds longer at 93
Man,
seconds.
Man, that was a hassle.
We were all just like, you have to be kidding me.
Yeah, I didn't see prime Muhammad Ali. As a kid, I saw a lot of Larry Holmes. Larry Holmes was the heavyweight champ, and he was the guy that actually made Muhammad Ali retire. Remember, he beat the crap out of him in that one fight. And Holmes was kind of the next guy. So that was kind of the person I grew up on. But I've never seen a fighter that was more impressive and scary to watch than Mike Tyson. He was just a bull.
Mm. 30 years ago in 1994, 26-year-old Anna Nicole Smith married 90-year-old billionaire J. Howard Marshall. They met in 1991 when she was dancing in Houston, and they were married for 14 months until his death in August of 1995.
Yeah, 14 months. Not bad.
Was that like the first big publicized instance of that? Like a hot girl marrying a super old guy for his money?
For my generation, yes. I'm sure it happened in every decade. There's probably someone in the 30s and the 40s that we don't know about. But yeah, that was a big deal. And one of the first reality shows.
We've mentioned...
I loved that show, by the way.
The Bill Belichick thing, right?
Yeah, I don't know if we did on the air. Maybe we've just been talking about it.
Like, you know,
this,
like, Bill Belichick is in his, like, he's 72. He's dating like a 25-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And somebody posted a picture of each of them in the year in 1999.
Uh-oh.
She was an infant and he was like 52 years old coaching in the NFL.
Yeah, she was like 3 years old when he won his first Super Bowl.
Like, come on, man. That's wrong.
27 years ago in 1997, Disney released Hercules. I know that's one of Andrew's favorites.
I love Hercules. Hercules rocks.
That's back before they had all the stars doing voices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
Oh, yeah. You had real actors, voice actors.
16 years ago in 2008, Pixar released WALL-E.
Still never seen that.
Oh, WALL-E's great. You don't like WALL-E?
Should I don't have any plans on ever seeing it.
Yeah, I wouldn't change them.
You hate animated movies anyway, Kevin.
Most of them, yeah, except South Park.
And my final Throwback Thursday, 10 years ago in 2014, Mark Wahlberg's Transformers Age of Extinction was released. It earned $100 million on its opening weekend and raked in $1.1 billion worldwide for its entire theatrical run.
I can't stand that guy.
Mark Wahlberg?
Mark.
Yeah. Nah.
Did you see he's making a movie now where... directed by Mel Gibson.
He and Jesus are best friends?
No, it's a movie. Remember when he said, if I was on 9/11, I would have stopped the hijacking?
Yes.
It's a movie where he stops the hijacking.
Oh, good for you.
Good for him. Good for him.
Tell me more about how you get up at 1 in the morning and pray and then work out.
Yeah.
Piece of crap.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Well, we have a new crisis.
What's up?
There is a serious lack of meaningful work for millennials and Gen Z. That it's not just menial work. It's not just people who work in an Amazon warehouse, people who are in the corporate world. It has been, there are so few decision makers and so few movers and shakers that, for example, if I own a company, the trend has become that I hire you, Rachel, to do a couple specific things. I hire Kevin to do a couple specific things. Andrew to do a couple specific things. But none of you have real responsibility. Mm-hmm. And therefore, when you go home at night, you're not feeling like you have real meaningful work and it's getting to people.
Mm. That makes sense.
A suggestion would be, and this is an oversimplification, but work what you can to get the meaning outside of work.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I know it's easier said than done because work is a lot of our time. But I get that, like, at some point, if it's not there for you, you find a different way to make it.
And very few people are finding it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah. Very few people are finding it in work.
That's a bigger deal than it sounds like. You know, like, when you say it, it doesn't sound like, oh, no, we'll suck it up. But it's a big deal.
Yeah. When two entire generations are suffering from it, and they say it's something like 1%, 1% of people would say that they have meaningful work. 99% of people are saying, no, I'm just clocking in and clocking out, just doing a job.